entrepreneurs, and professionals of Tampa Bay. Welcome to your hour for getting the information, the tools, and the connections for elevating your business. Welcome to Getting the Edge with Kelly Wilson. And here's your host, Kelly Wilson.
Welcome to Getting the Edge. I'm your host, Kelly Wilson. Thank you so much for being with us today. Toto, we're not in Kansas anymore. Getting the Edge has gone out in the community, and we look forward to bringing you episodes every week. But instead of you coming to us, we're coming to you. And we're so excited about this new transition with the show. After almost 8 years now with it, it's time for a change. And there's so much more opportunities for us to visit wonderful places within our community, like, for example, where we are today at the Mahaffey Theater in St. Petersburg with the one and only Mark Cantrell, who is the president and CEO of the Florida Orchestra. Hi, thank Mark.
You. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're busy.
It's been a bit, we're all busy these days.
Yeah.
But it's busy in a good way and for a really good reason. So it's terrific.
Yeah.
Glad to host you.
Thank you. Thank you. This is a beautiful facility here, and we're right on the water. The airport is right behind us, and we watch the planes fly in and out, and yeah, it's absolutely beautiful. So really excited to be here. We didn't get into the theater like I might have wanted. That's okay. That's okay. But you are just wonderful, charismatic. I've had the pleasure of interviewing you and being a friend since 2020, when I didn't realize when I heard you say 3 years, and because you had just
I've been here for 2.5 years. Yeah. Valentine's Day of 2019 was my first day, and as the CEO of the Florida Orchestra.
Yeah, it's gone fast.
Yeah,
and so much has happened.
I look back and it's like it's only 2.5 years. Sometimes it seems like it was forever ago, but then other times it seems like it's just gone by in a heartbeat.
Yeah, so. Well, we've had so much happen as well, but I'm very thankful for your contributions to the magazine. We featured Mark, so he was included in the the New Year not-for-profit in 2020 with 9 other amazing nonprofit leaders, and it was wonderful to get to know you then and your background.
Seems like so long ago.
It does. And then that event was our last event out.
It's hard to believe. It's hard to believe. And there's been a lot happen in the last last year and a half. But it's not all bad. I mean,
No, you look for the good that you can take from it, of course. And that's what I talk about all the time, is the downtime is time to work on yourself and do what you need to do, and reflection and everything else that comes along with it. Not only are you the, I can't wait to talk about the orchestra and what you have coming up this fall, because we have a launch celebration coming, but so do you. Your history, your background, your journey has been pretty awesome. And in some of the recent articles, definitely check out Edge's resource library on our website. All of the articles from the previous issues are there, and you've had some great ones. And this last one, it was by far one of my favorites, the last conversation I had with my father. I was in tears when I read it. And that is what you want to do when you write. And it's all about the feeling. And I am honored that we are able to kind of get you to tap into those emotions and share them with us, because we learn so much if we're able to kind of make ourselves vulnerable a little bit and show that side. And because we're all, at the end of the day, all just humans. We have feelings. We all are dealing with the same thing. But so many people don't, but thank you. That's a great article, by the way.
I think it's part of growing up in the arts. I mean, my entire life, with the exception of the 6 years as an airline pilot, has been, even then I was still flying, has been literally in the arts, and you spend your entire time. There's a famous conductor, Brice Abravanel, who was the longtime conductor of the Utah Symphony. Really took them to a great level, a fantastic organization. I remember when I was in high school, he was out conducting the youth orchestra we were playing in, and he gave a little talk about things, and he was talking to all of the young ladies in the orchestra, saying, you don't worry about all of it, going for all of the athletes and all of the, in your schools and doing all of that. He said, all they're worried about are these. And he said, all of the musicians, all they're worried about is this.
Oh.
And he's right. We spend our entire time when we sit on stage playing, doing nothing but confronting our emotions. So
that's a great way to look at it.
Of course, all the guys there, you know, we're all these geeky band guys going, hey, you know, but,
so the girls are like,
Yeah. You know, but it was, but he was right. You know, as musicians, we spend our entire time confronting our emotions and how it relates to what we're doing. So it's, you know, it's easy to do that.
Yeah. You have had such an interesting background. You just mentioned airline pilot. And also, my favorite is the sled dog racing.
That I did not do for a living. That was money out. That was not money in. So that was, but it was still fun.
Absolutely, I love the movies, and we talk about this every time we come together. The Disney movie.
The new one that came out, Togo.
Oh, I don't know that I've seen that one.
Oh, that's a new one with Willem Dafoe, and it's fantastic.
Okay, no, yeah. I think I've watched. Yes, yeah. I believe I have seen that one, but. With the nine dogs that are left behind, was it the nine?
Snow Dogs, which was with was one. Oh no!
Nope.
No! I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's with the guy that died
in Antarctica.
That died, unfortunately, from Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, down in Antarctica, where they left him, they abandoned him, and then they went down and rescued him.
Right.
Yes, because that was a heartbreaking.
Right.
It'll come to me, the name of it.
I know. And as many times as I've seen that movie, I'm surprised. But where are you from?
So I grew up in Arizona.
Okay.
I was actually born in the Midwest in Kansas, but we moved to Arizona when I was.
So when I say we're not in Kansas anymore.
Yeah.
That was kind of funny.
Yeah, but for me, I have no memories of Kansas. We moved out of there when I was less.
But you were
than
born
one
there.
Old. Yeah, but I was less than one when we moved out. So we moved to Arizona when I was very, very young, and so I basically grew up in Arizona.
So what was young Mark like?
Always curious,
frequently
in trouble, but not bad trouble, but just always just kind of getting into it, just a little bit, just enough that it was, you know, annoying to everybody else, but not so much that it was ever like really deep trouble. So it was just because I was curious and impatient, and I hated sitting still. Mm-hmm.
I still have that problem today.
Yeah, well, same here. I mean, it was a good thing, in my life right after I got out of college. You know, I was, dirt poor, as most of us were. So I never had a TV, and not having a TV to occupy your time, you know, I got to have something to do. So, and I've just been always curious, and I think puzzles and problem solving since I can remember as a little boy, were always something that, intrigued me. My mom and dad would get so furious at me when they'd come home, or I'd come home from school and I'd take something apart. And sometimes I couldn't always get it back together, but you know, I'd take something apart just to see how it worked.
Right.
And that's just from the time I was a little boy, that's what it was.
That's where the furniture building probably comes
into. Actually, more the music, because people don't realize this about music or art in general. It doesn't matter what whether it's visual art or music or dance. Or whatever, it is nothing from the second you sit down to do it to when you perform and are done. It's nothing but a series of problems that you have to solve.
I love music. Everything I do is rhythm. If my entire life, that's what's gotten me through everything. I love the big headphones. And when I was young, my father and I, that was the one memory I have with him, because he really wasn't around, and he died young, but was recording music, which I probably said the story with you before, but. And picking songs for the restaurants that he ran. And it's, in fact, every night, I mean, it's my daydreaming, my visualization time. Brian Culbertson, I tell you, like the keys, I mean, you know, you get, it just, there's certain keys that trigger something within your body.
Absolutely. And in the symphonic world, they knew that. So, and not to get too technical, but if you're going to write something that's not very happy and it's pretty dark and depressed, B-flat minor is a really great key to write something in. It doesn't matter what instruments you're playing on or what genre. You want something heroic, there have been studies done on this, but you want something heroic. E-flat major is a great key, both Beethoven and his Eroica Symphony, Shostakovich, they would all write things in keys that were very specific. You know, Eroica is an E-flat. Strauss, right? Ein Heldenleben, A Hero's Life, which is an autobiography and music of him in the key of E-flat. Keys make a big difference. And that's not just major and minor. I mean, there's a very big difference between F major and E major, and they're half step apart from each other. Huge difference.
I love the key, but I don't know anything about music. I almost think in a past life I was a pianist or something. There's something about the piano, and I've attempted quite a few times. But I'm always, but I just, I could listen, and even the saxophone, the piano, and those are probably my, but even the like acoustic guitar is like, all of it, I plan to have a music group at some point in the future.
You're never too old. Having taught,
well, I'll call you because you could be one of the members.
I'll steer you in the right way. Having taught little kids and having taught adults at various times when I was a musician, adults are easier to teach because they can focus and they have a plan. And it's like, I want to get this done. Mm-hmm. Kids are, you know, it's like 5 minutes and then they're off doing something else. But it's never too late, and I always tell people that. If you ever have a dream to do it, there is no reason why you can't ever, at any point in your life, whether you're 2 years old or you're 90 years old, there's no reason why you can't ever start and pick up an instrument, learn to play it.
Well, I think it's so soothing, and it's therapeutic, and problem solving, and really, it's a challenge, you know, to learn a new skill, but, you know, to play something that beautiful. Alicia Keys is another, you know, that I bought a lot of the piano books for her. But Brian Culbertson, because he mixes in too the, you know, the saxophone and some of the other instruments and then the vocals, it's gotten me through everything.
Music is the one thing that is in every part of our life. Wherever you go, whatever you do, it's there.
Every life has a soundtrack.
Yes, it does. Just think about it. Even if there's no music playing, like right now, we don't hear music playing.
But
there's a pattern of our speech. Yeah. There's the inflection of our speech. There's the background of the air conditioning that's in the room.
Yeah. It's vibrations.
The airplane's taking off. That's all sound. It's all part of music. Gustav Mahler, who is one of my favorite composers, wrote what he heard. And a lot of what he grew up with in Austria was he heard the military bands in the square. He would go for walks in the woods and hear the birds. And he incorporated that into all of his symphonic forms. So it's not this, where did he come up with these ideas? It's what they heard. It's what people grew up with. And, you know, the pop artists today, it's the same thing. It's what they hear, sometimes internally, sometimes externally, and that has a way of making it into what we do. That's why music is so powerful, is because it takes experiences that we can't really put into words, and it somehow emotionally allows us to understand them.
Yeah, absolutely. With different clients that I do some consulting with, I try to get them into different mindsets, and one of them is, you know, eliminating any old music that you have any associations with and picking 10 new songs like each week, you know, and creating new memories and new visualizations and new dreams, you know, and creating, and then you soon start to shift an old mindset.
You
create new hopes of opportunity, I guess is the right way to say that. But so let's talk about your sled dog experiences. Where did that, what was the first?
So, growing up in Arizona is not a logical explanation to that. So, I was an Eagle Scout when I was much younger. I got that, I think, when I was 13. And I had a very active Boy Scout troop. And what we did was go winter camping all the time. And I loved to winter camp. There's no bugs. There's no bears.
That would be an advantage.
There's no people. And there's no and there's plenty of water because, you know, it's snow around. And you got plenty of firewood everywhere you go. So other than the cold, which you can equip for, it's a really magical time to be out in the woods, even for long periods of time where you're not near anything. So I always loved that part of it. And I remember I did a two-week-long canoe trip down the Allegash with a friend of mine. Well, this is back in the early 90s. And we bumped into a ranger that had a husky, and it was, the dog just seemed to be the happiest thing on the planet. He's running around the woods, you know, just happy as can be. So I thought when I got back, I want to get a dog. So I talked to my wife, and she's like, all right. She finally relented, and we went dog shopping, and we got a husky. And right after that, we went on tour with the Boston Pops, and I remember sitting in a hotel room, which is the only time I ever watched TV, and they had a TV show on, one of those travel ones, where they were cross-country skiing in the Sierra Nevadas, and they were pulling the little sleds behind them so that they could go on, you know, multi-day camping trips. And I got to thinking, wow, well, I could have the dog pull the sled, and we could go further. Then I got to thinking, well, if I had enough dogs, then they could pull the sled and me, and then 24 dogs later, there you go. So that's how I got into it.
So Mark also wrote an article for us, and one of the previous issues was what I learned about leadership from my sled dogs. And it is, again, one of my favorites. It's awesome. It really is. It's learning to trust, too.
Well, it is, and we don't have a common language. Yeah, with people, you do. But in some ways, I think that's better because you become much more. One of the things we ignore is human beings. I don't want to say body language, but just the sense of empathy of where people, where we are. And this is one of the things, you know, Michael Francis, our music director, talks about with music, is it really is a lot of empathy. And I think what I learned with it from the dogs was we don't speak the same language, but yet when one of them was struggling or one of them was not happy in particular, because happy dogs take you places, unhappy dogs lay down on the snow, and that's a really bad thing. So, but you start to tune into them. And I love, I always get the question, you had 24 dogs. Could you keep them straight? And I'm like, if I lined up 24 of your friends, you could tell them, you could name each one of them and tell me something in depth about each one of your friends. And it was the same way with the dogs. But you really get in tune with them and start to feel with them. And they're all different, trust me. I mean, I have...
That's like personalities,
oh,
right.
Night and day difference. My main leader, a dog named Sergei that I got from a guy in Alaska, a friend in Alaska, he had finished the Iditarod as a two-year-old in third place.
He finished the what?
The Iditarod. That's a 1,000-mile race that happens in Alaska every year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I got him when he was 5 years old from Bill Cotter. And he was the funkiest dog in the world. He
funkiest?
Hated, funkiest. He hated running. Usually sled dogs are run in pairs. Mm-hmm. He hated running next to another dog. He liked solo lead, which is really rare and unusual. But that you put him next to somebody else, and he was just brutal. Not like fighting-wise, but just... You know, just all over him. You know, no, we're going this way. You're doing it my way. And the dogs are like, "What did you put me next to?" So I never put him. Even if I put him back in the team and he wasn't running lead, which was almost never, he always ran single. He just liked it. You know, I had another dog, Oreo, who was just like power steering. If you even thought of something, she'd take you in a direction where you wanted to go. I mean, she was fantastic. She was the first really good lead dog.
Telekinesis, huh?
I had another one, Tuvok, who was a young, big dog, young guy. Dumb as a post kind of comes to mind, but he really wasn't dumb. But as a leader, you know, you could scream at him all day to take a direction or do something, and he was oblivious to it. But yet, when he was up there running, he'd run up front all day. It's a lot of pressure to be a lead dog, yeah, because you have, you know, anywhere from, you know, 10 to 14 other dogs behind you. So if you suddenly stop or whatever, it's just a lot
right,
of pressure.
Right, right. And plus if you're
him.
Carrying anything.
Yeah.
So share the story that you wrote about what you learned from leadership from your sled dogs, because it'd be great to hear it.
So I had one dog, another leader, not a great leader, Torque was her name. And she was a white dog, Siberian Husky, not Alaskan, which we had, which I won't get into. But basically the same thing. But she looked like your typical Siberian Husky, but she was basically pure white. And that dog was a wanker. There was no two ways about it. If she could find a way to goof off, she was going to goof off, and even though she'd run up front. So we're at the end of the first leg of a race up in northern Maine, and it had rained 2 days before the race, and then it snowed the day of the race. So there was a lot of glare ice, especially on the lakes. It was not a good scene. So it was, you know, 67 miles to the first checkpoint, and the last 5 miles is going across the lake.
Now, the ice is frozen, though.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, this is beginning of March, so that's okay. That's actually the prime.
So that
time
wasn't
of winter.
A concern.
Well, anytime you go across a lake, it's a concern. Mm-hmm. But like on the trails were icy, but the lakes were glazed over because they had all that rain on them. So we had what we call glare ice, which is just like sheer, than even like ice hockey rink. I mean,
that's
it's
where
like glass.
You just
I mean, you don't get no purchase
right.
on anything. So, so the last 5 miles into the checkpoint are on the lake, and it was dark when we come in, and so you can see the checkpoint down there, and the dogs are like, okay, we're going there, give them the general thing. So we're going in there, and you know, they started veering off you know, in the wrong direction before, and I'm like, okay, I'm tired, I do not want to take the circuitous route let's just go straight down the lake to the checkpoint. And they kept veering off, and they kept veering off to the left, and I'm like, and Oreo was up front, and I'm like, Oreo, you know, G, trying to get her back on, and she'd come back on, and then she'd run off again.
And how long had you been going at this point? And you still had a lot,
this was the first leg of a 300-mile race.
Okay.
So we were at 62 miles, and you go checkpoint to checkpoint to checkpoint, so we were 62 miles into it. Everybody's tired, that's a long run, and we'd been at it for probably 7 or 8 hours, and I finally, Oreo just kept going off, and every time I kept doing it, it got worse the next time when she'd come back, so I finally stopped. I'm like, all right, you're tired, you've been up front all day long. Found a crack in the ice. You know, usually the ice is like, you know, 3 feet thick at that time. I mean, they're driving trucks out on it. Get the snow hooks, we have these two big hooks that go in there, because you can't stop really on the ice, so I'm dragging these things along the ice, and it catches in a crack and stops, and I'm like, okay, this is good. So I run up, change her out, put Torque up there, Yeah, well, I tried a couple other leaders up there, the same thing. They kept going off to the left. So then I put Torque up there as a last resort, because other than that, I was going to get up there and walk them. And she goes really hard to the left immediately, and I'm just like, all right, whatever, just go. I'm not done. We'll run over the side of the lake, and we'll go wherever you want to go at this point. And no sooner than had she taken that hard left than 100 feet, you know, from me, just over to the, you know, the wall over there, there was a giant lead. It was cloud covered, so there was, surprisingly, when it's cloudy in the wintertime, there's a fair amount of light in the air. You can see actually better than when it's clear skies. And, you know, and I have a really strong headlamp on, and there was a big lead, which is like a split in the ice that was open water. And I have no idea whether that was the ice had opened up and it went down to the bottom of the lake 100 feet down, or whether you run over it and you're in 2 inches of water, because you get the overflow, you know, where you have layers that build up. Yeah. Well, you get layers that will build up,
right?
And you have no idea whether you're going to go to the bottom or you're going to go, you know, 2 inches down. But it's still frightening, because it could be a combination of that. So I just, you know, I finally said, all right, you know, and I was tired, and I wasn't paying attention to the dogs as much as I should, because they were giving me clear commands when, you know, four leaders say, no, we're going off to the left.
Right.
Well, they can smell it. They
eventually
can also
you
hear
just start
it.
To think, let me just.
I wasn't trusting him. I'm like, I wanted to get to the end. And it's the same thing to talk about in flying,
well,
not commercial flying.
We almost think we know best, right?
Yeah, that's what it was. I'm like, I want to get to the end. Just go straight. That's where it's at. And they're like, you know, they're down there. You know, their noses are that far off of the ice. They can smell it. They smell well better than we do. And ice and open water smell very different. I mean, it's amazing. They say we see things with our eyes, with our ears, and then sometimes with what we can touch. Dogs add the sense in there, and that creates a whole other picture and an image that we can't even comprehend, because our smelling is so weak. And they also hear it, and so they avoided the ice. And it was purely because I wasn't trusting them, and I wasn't allowing them to do what they did best, mm-hmm. and that they knew better than me, that almost could have spelled catastrophe. So that was a very big lesson to learn. And, you know, sometimes just pay attention a little bit and you can do a lot better. So,
right.
And then we got around the lead, and then she was totally useless and she was goofing off. So we got around that lead, and I stopped again and put Oriole back up front, and we went down the ice without any problem. You are tired. These things are very physically and demanding, because you run a 300-mile race, you run for 6 or 7 hours, you pull into the checkpoint, rest for 6 or 7 hours.
So how long does it take altogether, the process? Is that a couple of days, or is
Okay. The race started on Saturday, and if the conditions were fast, we would be in on Monday. If the conditions were slow, it would be on Tuesday. It just depended, you know. A 300-mile race takes, you know, roughly, you know, two and a half days, maybe 3 days. A 500-mile race can take anywhere from 3.5 days to 5 days, 6 days. It just depends. The conditions make a huge difference.
So you have sled dog racer, and I learned what mushing means from Mark. Okay, so and then you were with the Boston Pops for a while. You've just had this amazing career as a musician
Lucky. Yep.
And then decided you wanted a break and became an airline pilot for a commercial airline. You're so multi-talented. It's like I said.
It's the same skill set.
Not all of us.
It's the exact same skill set. It's exactly the same.
As a sled dog?
No, as sitting on stage playing. Okay. When you are playing on stage, you are two or three steps ahead of the music. Always you have to be. And you're reacting to what's going on with your colleagues and the music director up front. When you are flying an airplane, you are two or three steps ahead of the airplane, while reacting to what's going on with your environment, with ATC, air traffic control. And if you lose that two or three steps ahead, in the orchestra, all I did was just make the viola players unhappy because they sat in front of me, because I'd screw up and get lost or whatever. In an airplane, you make the news and you become a lawn ornament somewhere. So it's a little bit different, but it's same skill set. And it's also, they say, musicians typically also make very good lawyers, especially litigation.
Is that
because
right?
But from what I've been told, it's the same skill set. It's that reacting to what's happening and being two or three steps ahead.
I can see that maybe, but I can't see it. I don't think that's in one of your later chapters.
And in the music world.
You're too nice.
Yeah. No. I thought about when I transitioned to be an airline pilot, I'm like, well, what could I do? I could go and be an architect. Well, that was going to be 7 more years of school. And at that point in my life, that wasn't going to happen. Because that interested me, again, just the design part. I could go, you know, be an airline pilot. So I got into flying when I got out of sled dogs. Because the other habit or passion that I have, which is the only reason I think I work in life, is so I can go fishing. And I discovered all these lakes and ponds when I was up in northern Maine that the only way in was either by a snowmobile or a dog team in the winter or a seaplane in the summer. So I'm like, well, when my oldest daughter was born, the price of gas went through the roof. My dog truck was dying. It's like, okay, this is time to let this go. I'm like, but I want to have something else. So that's when I got my pilot's license. And I wanted to do it so I could get, you know, my seaplane rating, and then I could go fly into all these little
lakes. Right. It was all about to get for the end result or part of the journey piece later. Yeah, I love that. And I think as we get older, too, or maybe at a certain part, we start to be strategic maybe with how we're, maybe it took me a little later to find that. Anyway, but
those days have passed. At this point, I don't know what, I keep telling everybody, maybe next time I'm going to be a cowboy for my next career.
I could see that more so than a litigation attorney, for
that's
sure.
It's just whatever kind of happens to be in front of you at the time that's exciting.
When is your birthday?
May 22nd.
May 22nd. So you're a Taurus.
No, I'm a Gemini.
Oh,
I'm right on the cusp. I'm a really stubborn airhead.
I don't. You're far from that as well. You are extremely intelligent. That's why you're three steps ahead, and you keep everything is kind of a functioning wheel.
In the airline industry, when we're training, especially when we went from flight training to getting hired by the airline, you have to go and learn. You know, you go to ground school for the first time. There's a phrase that they use, learning to drink out of the 8-inch fire hose. And you can do it, and it works. If you try and take and get every drop that comes out of that 8-inch fire hose, you're going to drown. And music is the same thing. You know, it's performing when you're on stage is no different. I mean, there are certain things you're not going to get, and there are certain things that you need, and because it's a very dynamic environment. Mm-hmm. So you have to figure out very quickly what you need and what you don't need and get rid of the stuff and don't get encumbered by the things that aren't going to help you get through the performance. And
the collaboration and having, you know, I guess it's in business. It can be in anything where you have these brilliant minds and these talented individuals that, you know, strengths and weaknesses, I guess. But coming together and complementing.
Yep.
And
in music, we do that without words.
Well, and that's where I'm saying music is the blissful. Business is great, but the music piece of it, it's, you know, extremely therapeutic.
But if people learn in the business world to, words are incredibly powerful. I mean, actually, this is the problem that I think we see today in today's world is people don't understand just how powerful words are. I mean, they can be incredibly, even more powerful than music in some ways, if used properly.
And not for good reasons.
For bad or for good, words can be incredibly powerful and moving. But if there's not thought put into them, and this is why I love like Hemingway, and I love a lot of really great writers, is because they really, like Thomas Jefferson said when he wrote the Declaration of Independence, they changed it. But when he wrote his original draft of it, he said every word was chosen very carefully and very specifically. And they said, you know, that's Benjamin Franklin's famous quote was, "Yes, but it won't be only your words that are in this." But great writers do that, and that's why I'm always awed by great writers, is because every word is chosen very thoughtfully.
Yeah.
And it's but music is the same way. It helps us when you take words and combine it with the emotional part of it,
right,
and the music,
right,
it things can become very powerful.
Yeah, it is so much a part of me, and it has been my entire life. And I look forward to, as I design future spaces, you know, it's all about the music that's going to be playing. I mean, we were just talking on the way to this beautiful place about our event, and I said, you know what, this time I'm bringing my own playlist, because when the music is not right, and in fact, I will DJ if I need to, you know, I mean, to make sure that it's my music, and that, because it's chosen for a reason. It's a whole mood, it's everything that I'm trying to set, not only for all of the amazing guests that are there, but for myself.
Absolutely.
You know, it's a street. I wish everyone could feel kind of that passion, you know, because I do think it brings so much to us that it's...
Everyone can if they just allow themselves to.
But you have to quiet yourself. I think that's what I...
My mind is so... It just is constantly going with everything. It just never stops.
I guess slow down, take time for yourself is what I mean. So many people... Because I ask people often, how often do you, you know, put a set of headphones on and just visualize or daydream? I said daydream, and I offend people sometimes. They're like, of course you don't daydream. I'm not a teenager. So I started saying, do you visualize? You know, because
I do nothing but daydream. Even literally, I mean, every day. And I don't look at that as a bad thing. I mean, because I did that as a child.
This is why I enjoy you so much.
No, I did. I encourage people the same thing. I say, why? Look, dreams are one of the few things that we have that don't cost us anything.
Right, and they're ours. And no one can take them away from you. I mean, they can if you let them. If you don't want to give them the power. And
the fun is when you turn those daydreams into reality, or you try to.
Everything that I've ever done, I've dreamed about before, but. You know, I think we all go through hard times, and that's to be expected. You know, that's life. But if you don't dream, what's the alternative? The opposite. I mean, doom and gloom. I have.
Well, that's why I'm in the business I'm in today with the orchestra. Because why would I come into this? Well, and that's why I'm here in Tampa Bay right now. And I have to give my little speech of why this area is so special for people. What attracted me here was the potential of this place. Mm-hmm. Tampa Bay right now has the ability to become the Paris of the 1880s or the 1890s. We can become the cultural hub of the world. All of the pieces are here. We have great visual arts. We have great schools. We have great restaurants. We have more and more burgeoning great businesses that are moving here and realizing how special it is. So all we have to do is assemble the right team to put that puzzle together. All the puzzle pieces are there. And if we do that, this place becomes... not just the cultural hub, but literally could become the hub of the world like Paris was in the 1880s and 90s. It's all here. And that's the dream that brought me into this business and has brought me here. And we could do it.
Well, and I would say you're not the only one with it. There's so many others that
see it as well.
It's not
going to be
me
that does it.
Exactly.
It's a team of people.
Absolutely.
That each can contribute to doing this.
And I think with so many people seeing that dream, those are those individuals bringing it together to work towards bringing that into a reality.
And then we have to share what, you know, our what we see and what our beliefs are with everybody else. And that's the beauty of doing this job. I don't go to work. I literally haven't had to work very much in my life. I mean, I'm so blessed and so lucky to do what I get to do. And I get to dream and then figure out how to make them come true.
I love it. Me too. I love it. When I'm in strategy mode. And, you know, it's funny too, because sometimes the music's blasting, you know, I listen to just about every genre, but depends what mood you're in, I think.
But
I mean, it's just going and going. Sometimes I'll pause it if I'm really trying to focus on something. But for the most part, it's when I'm most creative. The music,
Yeah.
And I enjoy writing. It's funny, in college, I had a professor that I was a young mother that was in school, and I worked at nights and weekends, and I didn't get to live on campus like the rest of the kids. But I would write papers the night before they were due, and a professor would say, you know, if you considered a career in journalism, your writing is so good. And, you know, I was 19, 20 years old and a single mom, married, just about divorced. And I just, you know, it was just funny. And I just remember thinking, how good could it be? I wrote it last night. You know?
Nobody ever in high school or college ever, ever, ever used the words, you're a really good writer. Not once were those words ever used. And I still, to this day, I struggle with it. But to me, it's an art to it. Mm-hmm. And so it was a challenge. And it's like, that's why I started writing. And I'm, you know, and I, my family, I think, were the tribal storytellers from back in ancient days. And so I like telling stories. Usually I do, as long as I don't get too long-winded with them, I do a good job with it. And I had a guy that I had met, I'm drawing a blank on his name, I don't know him very well, who was an editor for an outdoor, a bunch of publications. And he said, you know, you've got such great stories, you should write them down. And I said, I can't write to save my life. And he said, doesn't matter if you can write, find somebody else that can do it. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, this is a challenge, so I need to learn to write. So then I started reading a lot more of, you know, like Hemingway and all these guys, you know, people who have written about the outdoors. And it's amazing how simple problem, simple solution, go for it and fix it. And I was not a good writer, and I'm still not a good writer, but I do, I would say I'm a genuine writer.
Yes, and maybe that's why. I would say I'm not a good writer either, but maybe I'm a genuine writer because I speak from the heart, and when I write the stories or do anything, so.
And when you have great editorial help. It goes a long way.
Yes, it does. Yeah, absolutely. So. Well, and it's nice too. Again, it's that collaboration piece where it's maybe a piece of music or something where it's words, but someone can twist them around
absolutely.
Or add that little special touch. So
absolutely.
It's artistic. It's kind of, again, just different platforms that we can.
And it was a challenge for me. It was like, you know, I wanted to, you know, I was impressed, you know, even guys like Winston Churchill, who was a brilliant writer in his own way, those kind of people impressed me and inspired me. And I'm like, okay, there's no reason why I can't do that other than lack of effort. And so that's just kind of where it went.
Yeah. I could sit and talk to you all day, listen to your stories. And even, you know, Winston Churchill and just everyone you mentioned, it's like it's great to sit around like-minded individuals.
Yes.
Because I think it just inspires us. We're already inspired and happy. And I just, the only way I can describe it is bliss in a sense within. But it just motivates you.
You know,
that's even possible. And even all the women that I had the opportunity to sit down with recently.
Yeah, with this, there's some really amazing women in this article, this last Edge magazine. I mean, I'm looking at the cover of this right now.
Yeah. Thank you.
There are some very impressive women. I mean, seriously, serious role models for everyone, not just other women, but role models for all of us on that. That's quite a lineup you have there.
Thank you. Yes, it was such an honor to write their stories. And that, you know, no pressure there, right? I mean, I have these 10, and I don't just choose one or two, I have 10. And I, of course, I have to write them. And I've tried even having someone else transcribe, but I've learned it's so much of my process if I transcribe myself. So I'm still playing around trying to figure out the right method for that. But in fact, Pam Iorio's story, normally, you know, I would transcribe, I'm at, you know, 900 or 1800 words, but then I have to get it down to 800, which is the worst part. But Pam's was like 4,000. She just kept talking, and it was just flowing and flowing. And I just left it. In fact, first time, I just put the whole thing on the website, and only so much in the magazine. But I'm really just honored every time I get to sit down. And that's why it's so great that we have these platforms. It's not just fair for me to sit down and kind of take all this in. I want to share it. So tell me about the fall season, because we're just about out of time. So you have a lot of exciting things happening.
This is a really exciting season. Right now, I'll say it's the most exciting season that we've ever done. But a year ago, I was saying that was the most exciting season we were ever going to do because of the challenges that we faced. And this year is possible because of last year. We had a great year last year with 86 concerts, live concerts here, as many or more than any orchestra in the country. And this year, the programming that Michael Francis has put together is just spectacular. September 24th, we start with a new piece, a fanfare by Michael Ippolito that we've used before. Great piece of music, which no one's heard. I have the score to it, so I've seen it. So I know what it is.
Okay.
That's the beauty of, I can sit there and look at it and this is neat. And then Jeffrey Multer, our concert master, who is one of the most superb violinists you'll ever hear anywhere, is playing Vivaldi Four Seasons and then Beethoven's Fifth Symphony.
Oh, wow.
So it's a pretty good way to start the year. And then it just goes from there. We have Symphony Fantastique, we have Mahler's Fifth Symphony, we have the Rachmaninoff Symphonic Dances, Tchaikovsky's Fifth Symphony, Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, which everybody loves.
And Star Wars in February.
And then on the pop side, we have Star Wars, and we have superhero soundtracks, we have a Broadway show. I mean, it literally, if we are not, and then we have rock shows, rock shows that we're doing. If you can't find something that you like, that we're doing that doesn't in some way speak to you, you might want to check your pulse.
Okay.
I mean,
love when you said it's not your grandfather's orchestra. It really is a new way of bringing wonderful minds and a collaborative effort.
We are trying to not have everybody just think it's one size fits all. You know, our pops concerts should be the best pops concerts for everybody. Our masterworks concerts should be great for them. Our rock shows should be the best for the rocks. You know, we're also doing Harry Potter Live this year.
Well, and then hopefully this will encourage some younger people,
exactly,
right? For the families to come as families, because I think incorporating this music into their lives at an early age, because if it's not already, could be.
This is a blockbuster year if there ever was a blockbuster year.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, we've already sold a ton of tickets and everybody's excited. You know, safety is always on our mind. And we, like we did last year, we will adjust to make sure that things are safe. But, people should be proud of this orchestra. They play way better than what they should of an orchestra of this size. I mean, this is like the Rays.
The Florida Rays
are exactly the same thing. Or the Florida Rays. The Tampa Bay Rays are exactly the same thing. What was it last year in the World Series? They said that like I think the two starting pitchers for the Dodgers exceeded the entire payroll for the Rays, and yet there the Rays are in the World Series. Mm. So, and the Florida Orchestra is kind of that same thing. We have some unbelievable talent in this orchestra, and because of Michael Francis bringing them together also, they play so well. And
you know, he chooses then who
It's through a whole blind audition process. Mm-hmm. And then he takes the pieces and puts them together and molds them into what they need. And it is, if you can't be proud of your orchestra, then there's something wrong. It's a great orchestra.
Right. No, I'm excited to visit often. Thankfully too, I'm at a point where I'm taking time to do things too, so that's nice. One of my favorite movies, again, I love any music or any movie that has music in it, but August Rush. You know, and you think August Rush, Robin Williams, and Freddie Highmore, I think, played the young, I don't know if that was based on a true story or not, but
I don't know.
The piece that he puts together, Juilliard, I guess, at the end of the movie, they mm-hmm. they play, and then it brings the parents together. If you haven't seen August Rush, I love it. But I had a question I was going to ask about the movie, and I can't remember now what it was going to be. But it's one of my favorite.
I got to go watch it. No, I haven't seen it.
I had a feeling, because you weren't giving me enough.
No, I have not seen it. There's a lot of movies I haven't seen. I love watching movies.
Okay, you would love August Rush.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
He's young. He's lives in an orphanage. Kind of. He's in. Robin Williams is kind of a. How would you say? You know, he.
He's Robin Williams.
Well, the kids on like in New York City that are musicians on the corners, like he farms them out and you give them all his money. He's like a pimp to
for the music world. Yeah.
right. For those, but it, just a beautiful story.
He's a contractor. Is appropriate?
Yes.
Yeah. No, I know exactly.
Okay. Please watch this movie. So Freddie Highmore, through this, he hears everything. The basketballs on the wind chimes, the beep beeps of the horns and the wind coming up from the street, you know, in the city, and just all of these sounds, and he puts together he composes this masterpiece, and Juilliard like highlights him in Central Park for this
I believe it actually is a true story.
Oh my God, I'm just
that story that you're talking about when you're telling me that part of it. So I haven't seen the movie, but I will go see it.
Oh my goodness, yes. It is just such, I've seen it many times, and Freddie, like I said, Freddie Highmore in that is just an awesome, and it's just very good. Okay, I'm going to have to watch that this weekend. You know, I should probably like cut us off because we'll stay here forever. There's just a lot of exciting things going on at the orchestra, and I'm happy to be partnered with you guys and with Edge, and so thankful for your contributions.
It's very mutual. We love the partnership that we've developed together, and it's just you have a great product and it's a great magazine and a great now digital presence that you're expanding to, and it's good to see in the community because that's the kind of stuff that helps set our community above just any other city.
Well, thank you. It's about community. It's about telling and highlighting all these great, wonderful individuals like we talked about.
Well, you're telling the story of us.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and that's important. We need people to do that.
Thank you. Really trying to highlight the people behind these amazing organizations because I feel like it helps connect even more. And you know, if they knew these stories, they would want to be more, involved.
Well, it's nice to hear, other than just the common news, which we hear all the time.
Oh, yeah.
It's nice to hear things about people. The Olympics have gone this way with some of the coverage that they do. It's more than just the sports. It's about the people that are doing them. Because every single human being on the planet has a story.
Absolutely.
They may not think they do, but they actually do, and most other people would find it interesting.
I think that is what I take the most pride in, or especially even with the women and with any individuals. You would think that they would think that they have achieved so much. And I think that we all come to maybe a certain point in our lives where we question if we've made an impact in other people's lives. And you would like look at these women and you would think, how would you even think that? But I think we all don't see what other people see when we look in the mirror. You know,
that you hit on something there that's probably when people say what scares you the most, and it's the fact that at some point in my life, hopefully much later in my life, you're at the very end, and you ask the question, did I actually make an impact? Did I matter?
Right.
Did I do something meaningful? And the answer is no. That would be the most scariest.
Absolutely.
Thing.
And one thing I have to say too, I was in a meeting. So you're writing for me this issue for the next upcoming real estate issue for the fall. And I knew you'd be perfect. I reached out and asked if you would write on, what happened to the old value of a handshake and someone's word, and does someone's word even mean anything to this day? And the, you know, what happened to those old relationships? And just recently, I was in a meeting last Tuesday, and it's a new partnership that, that I'm working on with some with a lot of things. And we were just talking about it. Somehow it came up, and they said, because I was saying, okay, so should we need to finalize expectations, and they said, well, you know, we don't do contracts. Like we are old school. We believe in verbal. We were handshakers. You know, we don't want to work with anybody that, that we don't. And you know,
yep.
And it was so funny because I told him about you. I said I just 2 or 3 days ago reached out to Mark about writing.
So it's funny that you say that. Just a small preview of what's coming in the article that you, and I appreciate you asking me to write it. I still think you're out of your mind that you think I contribute anything to that, because I'm not a good writer, but with good help we do it. But when I had the furniture business, which is a very small one-person furniture business, I never once signed a contract with anyone. And it was all done exactly that way, with a handshake and based on honor and integrity.
Well, I must have known that, because that's why.
Yeah. So when you wrote that, I was like, well, this would be an easy one to write, because I started thinking about, okay, well, that's what it was when I did that. And there's other places where you can do that. And I, you know, in 800 words or less, I'll expand upon that.
Yeah, no, you are awesome. And you really, you're genuine. And I think that's the key, kind of what you mentioned earlier. When you write genuinely, and, you know, it's just as if you're talking. That's what I would like to think, that my words flow, like, you know, maybe a little more, with more. Less effort. I don't even know what I'm saying now. But, you know, like smooth instead of, you know, whatever. But I like to think I write and ramble just like I do on words and on the show. Anyway, a great way to end things, I guess. Well, definitely check it out, the Florida Orchestra. Look up at floridaorchestra.org, I believe,
.org,
right?
Yep.
And wow, so many amazing opportunities for the fall to look into. Mark, you are awesome.
Thanks.
And
you too.
Thank you. Thank you. September 29th is our upcoming event for Etch. Make sure you check it out. Tickets are available now and discounted through a certain time. If you are in the Tampa Bay area, please consider checking us out and joining us. We look forward to over 400 amazing community leaders and just the phenomenal Tampa Bay community. So definitely check it out. You can subscribe to our magazines, consider becoming a partner, and find out more at edgemediahub.com. And in the meantime, never stop dreaming. We'll see you again soon. Thank you.